The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This is our next MLS matchup. The Portland Timbers looking to finish atop the West standings with 2 weeks left in the regular season, squaring off against the LA Galaxy at Providence Park. It's tomorrow night, 10 Eastern, on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and on the ESPN app. And with that, we welcome you to another hour of Get Up, as always, live from the Seaport District at Pier 17. Brought to you by Heineken. We have cleared the breakfast dishes.
That's good, though.
Pancakes were delicious.
Yeah, delicious.
That was an excellent idea. We need to name more segments after foods that we can continue
like
to eat up here.
Ice cream segment.
But a nice job by Jeff Saturday, no question. And we will turn our attention back to the NFL as we continue starting right now, because we had misery at the midway. And that's where we're getting up with the Bears beating up on Monday night. Are they more paper tigers than monsters after all? Meanwhile, it seems impossible, but it just may be true. Are the Browns better without their best player? We'll explain the inexplicable. And then, the Cowboys violating football's most sacred code. Is there any way they come back from this, or should they just blow the whole thing up right now? We'll answer those and other questions as we get up with you, starting right now with the game of the night. Last night, first ever Monday night game at SoFi Stadium in Titletown, Los Angeles. They could win the World Series tonight. They were looking for Monday Night Football last night behind A.A. Ron Donald taking on the Bears. And in early first quarter, look at that. Rams breaking the huddle quick. Like it. Jared Goff, quick flip. Josh Reynolds, quick touchdown. Ends up 7-0. Goff threw for 219 and two touchdowns. Second quarter, Bears down 7-3. We show you this because it appeared they had a first down. And with the Bears offense, that's cause for celebration. But Jalen Ramsey wasn't even having that. Stopping it short. Call on the field was a first down. Rams challenge. Call reverse. Bears would punt. It was that kind of night. Later in the quarter, Bears down 10-3. And the pass rush starts to make its presence felt. Aaron Donald, Greg Gaines, team meeting at the quarterback. Foles feeling the pressure, not only from Donald all night, but from the former Bear, Leonard Floyd, getting the last laugh. Here he comes for one of his two sacks on the night. Rams had a total of four. 10-3 at halftime. Third quarter, same score. Rams with the ball first and 10. And the Bear defense starting to wear down. You can feel it happening. Watch it here. Watch as Malcolm Brown scoots through and then pushes the pile. He's going to wind up on the one-yard line. Rams rush for 161 yards on the night, and then adding injury to insult on that play. Khalil Mack down and shaken up. Very next play, Malcolm Brown did the dirty work, so reward him. Let him get the one-yard touch, and they do. Rams up 17-3. Ensuing Bears drive. Chicago gets it in the red zone. Nick Foles trying desperately to make something happen. Still in the third quarter, down two scores. But here's one of his two interceptions on the night. Nick Foles is QBR for the game, just 37. Bears can't get anything going. Rams a winner on Monday Night Football, 24-10.
Obviously, stating the obvious, the offense, we got to get stuff figured out. It's not good enough. And to be outscored by your defense, obviously, is unacceptable too.
Ultimately, it does, allow you to grow, because it ultimately sucks, but you have to learn how to get through it. So that's the stage we're at as a team. We've been fortunate to come out back in some games, and this was not one of them.
All right, so it is now time for Good Calls, which are brought to you by Subway. And as I bring the crew in here, now these teams have the same record, but boy, does it feel different. And speaking of good calls, Sean, let's start with the good. Not Sean, but Greg. Let's start with Sean McVay, who called a masterful game last night. What did you see from that Rams offense?
Yeah, I saw a clear and established identity that is rooted in jet sweep and off-tackle run married up with bootleg. It was just beautiful because they got to it in so many different ways. Look at the jet sweep, right? Left to right. Exactly what you're always going to see. They do it all the time. They go to the off-tackle run out to the right. And look, this neutralizes the pass rush because Khalil Mack's thinking. He can't just react. He can't just run towards the quarterback where he might be dropping. He's got to think about action underneath. Robert Woods catches it. Nice play early in the game. Exact same jet sweep action. Left to right. Same run fake action. Back to the right. He sweeps around because he's got a guy securing the edge. Now, nothing out in front. You just gather yourself, throw a nice, easy throw to Van Jefferson on the comeback. Pitch and catch, no problem whatsoever. And then finally, I love that they build in the answers. This time, they've got the jet sweep going underneath it. They fake the run to the left. Bears play it well. They actually collision the slide underneath, but guess what? Slam flat's built in. That's the fourth option. You can throw it to him, and by the way, he's always open. It's really amazing the way they marry up their run concepts with their jet sweep concepts with multiple different actions on their naked bootlegs. They did so with quick count. They did so by changing the launch point. And I thought McVay, Kevin O'Connell did a remarkable job keeping that pass rush neutralized by showing them a bunch of different looks.
All right, so they get to 5-2 by beating the entire NFC East and then beating Chicago last night. So, Agu, let's talk about the 5-2 Chicago Bears. As you watch them play, do you feel like you're watching a team that will be playing in the playoffs in January?
I'm not, G. And listen, what Greg just showed there is a part of the issue. We look at the creativity of Sean McVay, the jet sweep motion, changing leverages for defenses and not being able to see the hand action behind when they jet sweep in the Rams. It's so difficult for defenses. On the other side, Chicago, let's line up in this formation that we've been lining up in all season long, and these are the plays we run out of it, and the defense gets a beat on you. Aaron Donald was able to impact and affect this game because he knew when the pass rush was going to happen. And then, too, when you look at the trends in this league, when you look at what teams are doing now, there's a bunch of eye candy. There's a segment on this show called Eye Candy, but we call it legit eye candy in the NFL. There is nothing that the Bears are doing to threaten you defensively. They're saying we're going to line up and see if our guys are better than your guys, and they don't have the pieces. I like Robinson on the outside, but the run game is still a little stagnant, and they're trying to play this safe player type of offense in order to play in the hands of their defense, and defenses ain't winning championships no more in the NFL. You're going to have to put up some points to even get there.
So that's one side of the equation. Jeff, let me come to you on the other. This is the first season in NFL history where an entire division could wind up in the playoffs because they added a wild card. Everyone is over 500 in the NFC West. Actually, the last place team is San Francisco, who was in the Super Bowl last year, and they're 4-3. Do you believe they all get into the playoffs this year?
No, I don't. I think the Saints and the Bucks, one of those two. So I think three of the four will get in. And what's interesting is I probably think the Cardinals are going to be the one that gets left out. As bad as San Fran has been hurt with injuries, I think you're watching that team. They're becoming more and more physical as each week goes on. If they can stay decently healthy, nobody wants to play them. They're as well coached as anybody in the NFL. I think the Cardinals are relying too much on Murray and what he's trying to do. I think Russell Wilson helped them the other night with those three interceptions. But if you're looking at it, this is an incredibly good division. But I think ultimately only three of the four get in.
All right, again, we finish up on a Monday night where both teams are 5-2. But boy, does not feel like a similar story for them both. Guys, sit tight. Let me bring Graziano here. We're going to run the hurry up. And there is some news this morning from Tampa.
Yeah, Adam Schefter reporting Antonio Brown has officially signed his contract with the Buccaneers. The way this works is he can head into the building starting tomorrow, assuming all of his COVID tests have come back negative. He can be in team meetings, he can do some workouts, and he can be on the practice field. First time he can be on the practice field is next Tuesday, which is the day after his suspension expires. So watch out for AB on the practice field in Tampa next week. But this week he can go to meetings and stuff like that. Christian McCaffrey was on the practice field for the Carolina Panthers yesterday, which is encouraging. He's missed a few games with that sprained ankle. Now, the Panthers play this week Thursday night, so it's still a little bit of a time crunch to get McCaffrey back, and it still would be, I believe, a bit of a surprise if he plays this week. But the fact that he's on the practice field at least brings up the possibility that that could happen. Michael Thomas, the Saints wide receiver, hasn't played since week one. He doesn't look like he's going to play this week. It would be a surprise if he got out there. Remember, he had the ankle injury. Then he had the disciplinary issue. Then he had the bye. Then last week he had a hamstring injury. So he's still dealing with two problems with his leg. And until that gets cleared up, they're not going to play him. But so far, yeah, kind of a lost season to this point for a guy that last year set the single season record for receptions And
a guy who last year you could have made an argument was as valuable like as an MVP any player candidate. In the league.
Yeah.
And then you just point, he hasn't played since week one. And these are unusual circumstances, a fight in practice. Then he gets injured in practice. Is there some reason to think something is going on in New Orleans?
Other than, you know, your natural skepticism and cynicism, right? Like that's you always wonder when something like this, because it feels weird to your point. But to this point, no, they're saying once he's fully healthy, he will play.
All right, we'll keep an eye on it, obviously. Every week feels like an eternity, but we're not even halfway through the season. We'll see what he can contribute this year. Meanwhile, we're just getting rolling. Coming up, it seems impossible, but it might be true. Are the Browns actually better without Odell? We will explain the inexplicable. And we've talked so much about the Cowboys' response to the hit on Andy Dalton, but there's another side to it that has one of our guys outraged. And you'll hear what that is as this hour continues. And we have a second poll question today, similar to the first, but we're flipping the conference. Who you got for best team in the NFC? Tampa, Green Bay, Chicago, Seattle. Cast your vote. We'll hear from you later this hour. Get up on ESPN. What does Swagoo say?
G, you know what I say? I say Daniel Jones is a gangster.
He lying, G.
Look at me today, G. I'm already a beast, so we just gonna be beastie. I call you bro.
Yes.
You are my bro. Are you crying, son?
This is not exactly how I meant for this to go.
Take that and smoke it.
I look forward to this all week. This is where Marcus Spears hears the things that other people say and then tells you what they really mean. And we start with this. Everyone's still marveling over DK Metcalf chasing down Buda Baker after his interception on Russell Wilson the other night. Cliff Kingsbury was asked after the game if he thought Baker was going to score on the play. Here's what he said.
Yeah, I did until that huge stallion of a human came galloping out of nowhere. But phenomenal anticipation by him. DK Metcalf is an absolute freak athlete, and what an effort play by him. I mean, that's high school coaches to be showing that one for years. They just don't give up on a play. But
that's what Cliff Kingsbury says. What does Swagoo say?
Damn, Cliff, I'm right there with you. I was thinking, where are his other two legs? Because that is not a human running down Buda Baker. That looks like a horse coming out the gates, running down a normal human being. DK Metcalf is not normal. And G, when it happened, I tweeted out, it ain't no way DK Metcalf ain't from Wakanda.
It is one of my favorite plays of the NFL season. You can't stop watching it. It's kind of like the stiff arm that Derrick Henry had. It's so spectacular. Let's just keep it going. I don't even want to get to the next one until we see him all the way down the field. Remember, this is a guy who gave up on a play and didn't score a touchdown earlier in the season, now makes the ultimate hustle play. Okay, that's a great one. Marcus, next one. Next one is here. Another critical play from Sunday. The Falcons could have run out the clock for a last-second field goal against the Lions, but Todd Gurley fell into the end zone for a touchdown. Detroit got the ball back. They wind up winning the game. Here was Gurley's reaction to the play.
I was mad as hell. I was trying not to. My momentum took me in. It is what it is. I should have went down, you know. So, but who was going to... Yeah, I should have scored. I shouldn't have scored, I meant. I shouldn't have scored.
That's what Gurley said. What does Swagoo say?
Look, I know what the hell I'm supposed to do, but I'm not good enough not to score a touchdown. All my life as a kid, I've been told, get to the end zone, cross the goal line, make plays, put points on the board. So I'm going to curse all of y'all out right now because I'm not good enough not to score a touchdown. That's it. Point blank, period. Curse, 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 curse.
One of two times this weekend that we saw that happen. Happened in the Penn State game, and it happened there. All right, meanwhile, I'm really looking forward to this. Baker Mayfield was in such a good mood after the Browns' dramatic win over the Bengals. He dropped some DMX lyrics when asked about bouncing back from a rough start. Here's what he said.
You know, it's just the necessary mindset of, you know, doing whatever it takes to win. You know, it's, you know, having to, after that first quarter, stop, drop, shut them down, open up shop. You know, like, oh no, that's just Everett Ryder's role.
So that's what he said. What does Swagoo say?
Shout out to DMX. And the first thing that I came to mind was Baker in that ever-revolving cycle of falling out and then going crazy. And that's what Baker is doing. Quoting lyrics, dancing in the locker room, doing his thug fizzle. The bottom line is this. I want to see Baker celebrate after he gets a dub against the team that's like the versus battles that's going on right now. When it's DMX against Jay-Z and you win that game. Or it's DMX against Nas and you win that game. Or it's DMX against Kevin Gates. Or DMX against all another great rapper. I don't want to hear DMX lyrics after you just rapped against Vanilla Ice. I don't want that. I want it against one of the legends. Rap after you beat a legend, Baker, and then I'm right there with you, big homie.
If we're not contractually kept from doing so, I would right now literally do that entire song. I stop, collaborate, and listen. I've done it on TV before, and I can do it again, but I will not ruin your day with it. Meanwhile, Baker Mayfield, is he actually better without Odell? Is that a real question? These are the numbers. This is him with on the left and without on the right, Odell Beckham on the field during his time in Cleveland. And we had this argument earlier, and at the risk of bringing it back, I am bringing Greg McElroy back in because we just couldn't completely leave it there. Could Baker Mayfield actually be better, Greg, without OBJ on the field?
He is, Greeny, and the numbers support it. Do you realize that Baker Mayfield is completing almost 80% of his passes when not targeting Odell? Well, conversely, when targeting Odell, he completes just over 50%. He has more interceptions when targeting Odell over the last 2 years than he does touchdowns. And what we saw on Sunday was him playing within the offense, him manipulating defenders, him throwing to where the ball is supposed to go instead of forcing it in the direction of a needy wide receiver. Remember, it was week three, Baker Mayfield celebrating a touchdown against Washington, and he's having to walk off consoling Odell because he didn't get his look. He didn't get a touch. So I think for Baker and for this offense as a whole, knowing their identity and their strengths, it's actually going to serve them better down the road that Odell's not there and not clouding Baker Mayfield's judgment on where he throws the football.
Now, Marcus, we yelled and screamed about this earlier today. I'm not going to ask you to repeat all of that, but I will ask you, do you think there is something to a quarterback no longer feeling like he's got one guy I want to go to, I want to get him in there, he's a spectacular player? Do you believe the Browns play well the rest of the season without him?
I don't know the last time a number one wide receiver signed with a team not to get the ball. The second thing is, how is this OBJ fault? Baker Mayfield, throw the ball to the open man. Secondly, Kevin Stefanski, make sure you draw plays to throw for Baker Mayfield to throw the ball to the open man. It's OBJ fault that Baker Mayfield tries to force him the ball. Who has the damn ball in their hand every play? I mean, this is crazy.
It's crazy.
And no, they not a better team without Odell Beckham Jr.
I have to leave it there. It's an argument that has raged all morning long, and it's not going away. Meanwhile, there's no argument about this. Tom has been terrific. His former team, not so much. Are we seeing the answer to the longest standing question in football? We'll answer that one for you coming up. Get up, ESPN. We've got the poll question up at ESPN Greeny on Twitter. Who's the best team in the NFC? Cast your vote. We'll check in as the hour continues. Meanwhile, Dak Prescott is out. Zeke Elliott is struggling. Jerry Jones may be getting itchy. Where do the Cowboys go from here? We'll talk about it. Get up on ESPN.
Don't forget to vote on Election Day, November 3rd. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
We are back on Get Up, and if you were just joining us, here's a look at what happened on Monday Night Football last night, which was at SoFi Stadium for the first time ever, and it featured that man, Aaron Donald, against Nick Foles and the Bears' offense, and candidly, that's not a fair fight. There's one of four sacks for the Rams' defense last night, came with the Rams up 10-3 in the second quarter, and here comes another just a few plays later, and this one is the former Bear, Leonard Floyd. He who laughs last, laughs best. He had two of the sacks last night for the Rams. Third quarter, Bears down 17-3, trying desperately to get something going. Nothing doing. That's Foles. This is picked by Taylor Rapp. Foles would throw two interceptions on the night. Bears wouldn't score an offensive touchdown. Rams win it by a score of 24-10. Both teams 5-2, but they feel very different. Meanwhile, on the other end are the Cowboys, who were 2-5. They wound up 4-12 in 2015, which is the last time they started with this record. They wound up taking Zeke Elliott with the fourth pick that year. Meanwhile, the Cowboy defense has allowed 243 points. That is the most through seven games in franchise history, which is a record that has stood since their inaugural season in 1960. But the offense has been terrible, too. 16 turnovers, most in the NFL. So in general, this is a complete mess. Here's Stephen Jones right now on the state of the state.
I know we've got the right head guy for the job, and, you know, it's a work in progress. I know our fans are frustrated. We certainly understand the criticisms come our way. You know, Jerry and I are big believers in sticking with the staff, and, you know, we just got to give them their opportunity to work with these guys and continue to implement what they're trying to get accomplished.
Okay, so there was something we really wanted to get in today. We've had a lot of conversation here the last 2 days with former NFL players who were disappointed with the way the Cowboys did not rally to the defense of their quarterback, Andy Dalton, when he got cheap shot hit on Sunday. But Greg McElroy, I know there's something else that is on your mind as you watch that play.
Yeah, I had a real problem with the hit, naturally. And I've also had a real big problem with the lack of attention we've paid to John Bostic and the fact that this hit was absolutely inexcusable. And if this hit would have happened to Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Patrick Mahomes, what would the narrative around it have been? There would have been people in the media calling for John Bostic to get the Vontaze Burfict treatment and get kicked out of the league. Instead, the conversation centered around, oh, well, the Cowboys don't show fight, the Cowboys don't show mettle, the Cowboys aren't a team. No. The focus should be on the fact that John Bostic and the fact that he won't be suspended is absolutely laughable to me. I hope the league steps in because it's a double standard right now. I know Andy Dalton's a backup quarterback, but he should have the same protections afforded him as some of the best players in the league, especially when he gives himself up with a feet first slide.
Swagoo, I know it's difficult to gauge other people's intent, but you play defense in the NFL for a long time. Was that a dirty play?
Hell yeah, it was a dirty play. And it was ridiculous. Like, every defensive player in the league know now, gee, that you don't do that when a quarterback is sliding. And not only that, went for the head and neck area. Like, you could tell me, look, I'm a big proponent of the game moving fast, but we know the separation between hits that aren't intentional and hits that are intentional. And the thing that pissed me off so bad about what Bostic did, he act like he didn't understand what just transpired. Like, that was the part for me. And to Greg is absolutely right. Like, this should be a suspension, 100%. Like, and then you look at intent. We've all had these conversations about these type of plays in the league. We all see players pulling up every Sunday in every game with the intention that quarterbacks will slide. But him in particular thought he was going to get a hit on Andy Dalton when Andy Dalton saw him coming. It's ridiculous, man. And then I think that plays along into what we were talking about with how furious the guys around Andy Dalton should be and the reaction. So it's two parts to it. And then Mike McCarthy saying what he's saying. But hell yeah, Bostic knew what he was doing and should be suspended.
You know, Dan Graziano, the understanding I saw yesterday from the reporting is that the expectation is there will be no suspension from Bostic. Is there anything further you've heard?
In general, the league will look at the ejection as a suspension, first of all, right? So an additional suspension would be multiple games. So if they decide, and again, I'm not arguing one way or the other, if they decide that it's not worth a multiple game suspension, then we've seen in the past where they will say he was ejected, that serves as a suspension, and they'll fine the heck out of him.
Okay. So that, with that thought, Marcus, let me just, I'm not trying to defend anything. I'm saying when I asked Ryan Clark that question yesterday, he said that a lot of times defensive players are trying to, for lack of a better word, buzz the tower. They're trying to go right over the top to make sure that the player slides and that sometimes, maybe sometimes accidentally, you wind up hitting him in the head. That I'm just telling you that's what one of the things that was said yesterday. You're not buying it.
Completely disagree with RC. Like, this is the new league. Me and RC played in a league where you try to buzz, you try to get a hit on the quarterback, but they, like, gee, we had this conversation with Vontaze Burfict. All right? If you don't adapt to the new rules in the NFL, you are not going to last long as a defender. everybody knows in the league now when a quarterback is giving himself up. The tricky ones are when a quarterback is on the sideline, whether you know if he's going to go out of bounds or not. And usually I err on the side of the defenders a lot because the quarterbacks can turn it in or even drop a shoulder. We've seen that happen. But this particular situation, no. You avoid the hit. Like, it's guys in the league avoiding this hit. Every Sunday, it's guys avoiding the hit. Bostic knew what he was doing. You are not going to get low with a quarterback sliding feet first unless you intend on hitting him. Ain't no buzzing. This ain't the same league me and Ryan Clark played in.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't want to put words in his mouth, but that was essentially what he said to me yesterday. Greg, I'm glad we got that in. I know that was something you wanted to mention. I hadn't heard much about it, and I'm glad that we got it in here. Meanwhile, it is time to go on the clock. Let's give all our guys an opportunity to talk about different issues around the National Football League. And Marcus Spears, I'm starting with you. So 45 seconds on the clock for the big swagoo. Right now, Marcus, who is the MVP of the National Football League?
It's Tom Brady. And are we trending towards a 43-year-old quarterback winning MVP? Gee, will he be the oldest MVP? I'm sure he will. But right now, Brady is thrown for 18-10, 18 touchdowns, 4 picks. And he's trending towards 4,300 yards passing and 40 touchdowns and 9 picks on the season. The team right now is 5-2. At this point last year, they were 2-5, and they playing with the best field position, and we know that Jameis was throwing interceptions, and this team was always backed up in negative yardage. Tom Brady right now, all of the Russell Wilson talk, all of the Aaron Rodgers talk, rightfully so, but don't forget TB12 in Tampa is firmly in this MVP conversation based on the way he's playing.
For what it's worth, he is already the oldest MVP when he won it a few years ago, so he would be extending his own record. Let's put a pin in this conversation. I want to come back to that because I think there's a lot there. Meantime, Jeff is next. Joe Burrow threw for over 400 yards against Cleveland. Jeff, what has impressed you most about the number one pick in the draft? 45 seconds, go.
His consistency. Listen, I took a shot at him. He was talking about how calm he was preseason. And I made a comment, rookie should be seen, not heard. But this guy has impressed me, right? I mean, he's had 5 300-yard games. I think he's given his team the lead in the fourth quarter, 4 of 5. And here's the kicker for it all. He's tough. I mean, this kid is taking shots now. He's getting hit. I'm sitting back in clean pockets every Sunday and just feeling myself like he's getting hit. Myles Garrett almost broke his back last week, and he's still getting up and pushing his team forward. I have been so impressed with just the tenacity he has shown, the attitude he's shown. You can tell this entire team has rallied around him. It has been impressive. I'm going to put a little respect on his name. I took a little shot early, but, man, he's made a believer in me this early part of the season.
I like it. Yeah, look, as good as Baker Mayfield was the other day, I thought the best quarterback on the field was Joe Burrow. Speaking of Burrow, number one pick in this past NFL draft, Justin Fields is competing with Trevor Lawrence to be the number one pick in next year's draft. Greg, 45 seconds. Did Fields close the gap on Lawrence with his first game on Saturday?
Well, with the way Trevor Lawrence has played in the first few weeks of the season, you felt like that gap had never been bigger. He'd been in command. He'd been accurate. But guess what? Justin Fields and the Big Ten, their triumphant return this past Saturday reminded you that this might actually be a two-horse race at the top of the 2021 NFL draft. Justin Fields goes out, is remarkably efficient. He's 20 of 21, sets a Big Ten record in the process against a Nebraska team that is actually somewhat decent. So I am really impressed by what I saw from him. There's two things I wanted to see from Justin Fields this year. One, will he anticipate throws? And two, will he throw the ball with more conviction and more often on time? He did both on Saturday. But if that's a sign of things to come, it's going to be a fascinating race towards the draft next year.
Be an interesting one to watch. We'll get Mel and McShay on that as we continue. Guys, thank you. Sit tight. We've got much more to do as we go. Right now, let's get up and go through some of the other news. And, of course, tonight is Game 6 of the World Series. Tony Gonsolin will take the ball with a chance to pick the Dodgers to a championship. Tampa Bay will have Blake Snell trying to keep this series alive for a possible Game 7. Elsewhere, number 10, Florida, resumed meetings and practices yesterday for the first time in 2 weeks after 30 players and coaches tested positive for COVID, causing the postponement of two of their games. The Gators are scheduled to host Missouri on Saturday. And number 9, Wisconsin, might be down to its fourth string quarterback Saturday at Nebraska. The starter, Jack Cohn, had foot surgery. Backup Graham Metz, who played really well Saturday, and third stringer Chase Wolf, both reportedly testing positive for COVID. So that is definitely one to keep an eye on. And we hope to keep an eye on this on Halloween. We just talked about Justin Fields. You will see him, number 3, Ohio State, going to State College to take on number 18, Penn State, in a battle of high-powered offenses led by these star quarterbacks. Big Ten matchup is Saturday, 7:30 Eastern at Beaver Stadium on ABC and on the ESPN app. Meanwhile, we have much more to do. I want to go back to Brady. Is he proving that he's more valuable than his former coach was? We'll talk about that and more as we get up with you on ESPN. We continue on Get Up, and we're with you commercial-free for the next 15 minutes, and that is when First Take will come your way, and those guys are going to be plenty busy today. Here's what's coming your way at the top of the hour. First Take: should Jerry Jones change head coaches again? Max and Stephen A. will debate that and more. They're now 14 minutes away here on ESPN. We're with you until then, commercial free. Meanwhile, our next MLS match is the Portland Timbers, looking to finish atop the West standings with 2 weeks left in the regular season. They'll square off against the LA Galaxy at Providence Park tomorrow night, 10 Eastern, on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Now to this. This year's rookie quarterback class is shaping up to be something special. The first overall pick, Joe Burrow, we were just talking about him, putting up crazy numbers for Cincinnati, has the most attempts and completions through 7 games of all time. So he's been very impressive, despite the fact that his team hasn't won a lot of games. In L.A., Justin Herbert putting up big stats as well, throwing for over 1,500 yards this year. Only Cam Newton threw for more passing yards in a first 5 games, but he hasn't been winning a lot. Tua Tagovailoa, perhaps the most hyped of all the prospects, will make his much-anticipated debut this weekend for the Dolphins. They will start against the Rams. And I think there's a point that should be made here, and I will make this a change my mind for the day. Here's what I think, because you just heard me say, Joe Burrow playing great, but they haven't won games. Justin Herbert playing great, going toe-to-toe with some of the best quarterbacks in the sport, including Brady and Mahomes, but they don't win the games. All that is fine. No one's criticizing them. Tua is taking over a team that suddenly finds itself very much in the hunt to win the AFC East. And they bench a very hot quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick to do it. So my opinion is this. There is more pressure on Tua Tagovailoa to play well the rest of this season than there is on Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert combined. Because there are no moral victories for a team in the thick of a race. Let me bring the guys in and see if anyone wants to change my mind. Let me see. I'm looking at Jeff's face. Do you want to change my mind on that, Jeff Saturday?
Heck yeah, I want to change your mind. I love how you laid it in thick, though. I mean, you know what I mean? It's the right and the crux of the playoff. They're this, they're that. Here's the truth of it. The truth of it, this is a feel-good story right now, right? Tua comes back last week for the first time, throws his first 2 passes. This guy, his career was almost ended with the hip injury. The Dolphins are still rebuilding and still moving forward. They are playing well as a football team, but make no great expectations in this football team, in my opinion. They want to get their guy. They want to get their franchise started now. Continue on with Fitzpatrick, knowing you're going to make a move. If you felt like he had shown you in practice that he's improving and he's ready for the game, you know he's going to make errors. He's a rookie. You know where their team stands. So I think what you're allowing is you're allowing everyone else's perception. From the Dolphins' perspective, they have a long-term view of what Tua needs to do. You can't learn by watching. It does not work. It's a different situation than what the Chiefs had with Alex Smith years ago because they were going to go to the playoffs. I still don't think the Dolphins make it there. I don't think sitting Fitzpatrick puts undue necessary pressure on Tua. I think this guy's going to come in, fulfill his role, and try to get better like these other young quarterbacks have shown.
I am surprised to hear you say that. Jeff, to use your own words, I'm wondering if you're not high. Because if you're another player in that locker room, if you're an offensive lineman, a veteran in that locker room, you want them playing the kid because they might be able to win championships 2 years from now? Or you want them playing the guy who's going to win me football games this year when I'm 3-3 in a division where I might wind up winning it?
Yeah, again, listen, their offensive line isn't playing great, brother. Like they understand Fitzpatrick has played out of his mind. I fully agree with that. But we all know what Fitzpatrick usually does, right? He has 6 or 7 games where you're wild, and then he'll have 6 or 7 games where you're like, man, we can't buy a win here. I think they're looking for consistency. And again, the problem with Tua is you haven't seen anything. They haven't brought him in. They have to bring him in so you can at least see what you have and get this kid built up, because we don't know. He may give you a better chance to win the playoffs this year if what they're seeing in practice translates to the game field.
I agree, which is why I think there's more pressure on him than there is on the other quarterbacks. Greg, tell Jeff he's high.
Jeff, you're high, to use your word, all right? Seriously, because the more pressure is, the bigger the shoes. And you mentioned it, man. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick's playing out of his mind. And by the way, the team is playing hard for Ryan Fitzpatrick. So to win over the veterans and to do all these other things, if things start to go a little sideways, that's going to be really difficult on Tua and difficult on the staff to say, hey, look, we're playing for the future. So I think Greeny's totally onto this, because the expectation level for the Chargers and for the Bengals this year is essentially non-existent. And it was non-existent for the Dolphins, but they've clearly found themselves the last few weeks of the season.
Yes, we just cheered Joe Burrow for throwing for 400 yards in a loss. We've been cheering Justin Herbert for making games out of it when they played against the best teams in the NFL. There's going to be no cheering if the Dolphins start losing games, is what I think. We'll leave it there for the moment. We'll move it forward. Next up is our second poll question of the day. It was similar to the first. We did the AFC earlier. Now we've put up the NFC. Who you got for best team in the NFC? And I'll tell you, I put this up yesterday before the Monday night game, which would explain why the Bears are there and the Rams are not. So let me ask you guys your opinions as we take a look at this here. Who is up first on our let's go to Graziano first. McElroy is first. McElroy, who you got for best team in the NFC?
Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. And when he's protected, he's almost impossible to beat. Right now, they're taking great care of the football. He's 15-1 in turnover, touchdown to interception ratio since the second game of the season. He's completely dialed in. So it's Tampa Bay. They're playing great on defense, too. And the way they're protecting him, man, I don't see anyone slowing him down unless they can get pressure on Tom Brady.
Graziano, best team in the NFC.
Took me a while to come around, but I'm going to say the Buccaneers, too. Greg is right. They're playing defense in a league where maybe 3 or 4 teams are playing any defense. And their offense, as we saw Sunday, is operating at a high level. I don't know how he's doing it. I don't know how long he's going to keep doing it. But I say Tom Brady and the Buccaneers have the best team in the NFC right now.
Jeff.
Yeah, Buccaneers. I started the season with the Buccaneers. I'm not changing now. Listen, Todd Bowles and this defense will continue to get better. It will continue to be more impressive as the season goes on. Devin White, that kid is playing out of his mind. Speed on the defense. And then you flip it over offensively. What, like they said, best pressure percentage in the league offensive line-wise. You protect Tom Brady, he's going to carve you up. The Buccaneers got to be the number one team in the NFC right now.
Do we have any disagreement from the big swagoo? Marcus.
Not a chance, G. It's the most complete team, I would say, in the NFL when you talk about how dynamic they are on both sides of the ball. And listen, what they did to Aaron Rodgers is no small feat. What they did to the Green Bay Packers defensively is not a small feat at all. And we look at Tom Brady, we knew at some point this offense was going to come along. And might I add that they just signed Antonio Brown? Mm-hmm. That's an added to this team that everybody won't have. They dealt with some injuries to their receiving core. People are going to want the starters to stay healthy so they don't have to defend against Antonio Brown,
who actually did sign his contract officially today. So it is unanimous here. Let's take a look at where the voting went on the poll. Again, it's a little closer there. 39% like Tampa. We got some fans of Seattle. We got some fans in Green Bay. The Bears not getting a whole lot of love. Again, you can cast your vote. We'll keep that going through the radio show a little later today. Meanwhile, this weekend in the NFL is now officially over. And so let's go through the winners and losers. Swagoo, who was your biggest winner of Week 7?
Kyler Murray, man. Look, this was a huge win against a division foe, and you look at the success he had down the stretch in the game, obviously using his legs, but ball to DeAndre Hopkins, threw a touchdown to Christian Kirk. He created a lot of offense for this team that they needed, and he outdueled, for all intents and purposes, Russell Wilson. We know Russ threw 3 interceptions, a lot to derive from that game, but Kyler Murray had a really good game. That was a huge win for them.
Jeff, who was your biggest winner?
Got to be Pittsburgh Steelers. Listen, beating the Titans at the Titans' place, jumped off to a big lead, let the Titans back in the game. Defense stood up again. Again, if Roethlisberger doesn't turn the ball over, this game isn't even close. It shows you how dominant that defense is. Again, 8-3 last year when they scored 10 points or more. But Roethlisberger to give you more than 10 points. Got to be the Steelers.
How about the other side? Graziano, who's the biggest loser of the weekend?
I went with Deshaun Watson because I think this loss to the Packers Sunday dropped them to 1-6. I think it increased the likelihood that one or more of his receivers could get traded at the trade deadline, which is a week from today. We'll see what happens. We could be sitting here in a week saying he dodged one, but I think at 1-6, more likely they start shipping guys out than keeping them in Houston.
And finally, Greg, who was your biggest loser of the weekend?
It's got to be Cam Newton. It was an abysmal performance. By far the most inaccurate starting quarterback performance of the NFL weekend. He was all over the place. He didn't make good decisions, and he admitted. He said, if I continue to play the way I'm playing right now, the switch to Jarrett Stidham that they made late in the game is going to become permanent. So he's got to pick it up and pick it up quick for the Patriots to get back on track.
All right, that's an interesting one. So let me bring it back, Marcus, to you for a moment. Because if you look at how well Brady is playing, you just called him the MVP of the league this year. And you look at the struggles in New England where they are 2-4 and they look every bit of that. Do you believe that we are starting to see the answer to the long asked question? Was it really Brady or was it really Bill all those years in New England?
No, I mean, it's convenient, G, to say that. But we also have to take into account other things that have transpired. Look, Tom Brady, we all lamented, and I've been the one to say it's been more Tom Brady because the players have to actually execute the game plan. But if you look at the things that transpired in New England outside of Tom Brady, it wasn't set up for this team to have a lot of success if Cam wasn't going to be Superman. And we've seen now for the past two outings that Cam is struggling and his offense can't do anything. And on the other side of the ball, all of the opt-outs in New England. And then you go to the antithesis of that with Tom Brady, with all of the talent in the world and arguably the best defense in the league. Because they look, Tampa's team right now is head and shoulders above most teams in the NFL. So I'm not going to put this indictment on Bill Belichick. He'll recalibrate. But right now, it's a personnel issue in New England more so than it's a coaching issue.
Okay, I want to leave that there for the moment because I'm being told that we have some sound that we want to hear. So Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys, just did his regular weekly radio interview when he was talking about leadership in the locker room. Let's hear it.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Wow. Okay, so that's a Jerry Jones I don't hear often. Marcus, again, you played for that team. You know him. What is your reaction to what we just heard from Jerry?
It's a defense mechanism. It's absolutely a leadership void. Like, you don't have to. We've been around this game a long time, and I give Jerry credit for being around the team and having the pulse. It's a leadership void. Like, what are we talking about? You got players talking about the coaching staff. You got a coach calling out players after not responding the right way during the game after Andy Dalton hit. They not playing well. Let alone having the opportunity to even look like they're invested into the game. We got cornerbacks looking with eyes looking in the backfield at a rookies giving up touchdowns. Look, watching the football team ain't going to win a lot of games this year. They just beat the Cowboys 25-3. It's a leadership void.
Let me go around the group quickly. Go ahead, Jeff, real quick.
Yeah, Jerry's lying to himself here. I mean, listen, you can look at it, watch it, however you want to. From last week, move it all the way forward, even before Dak was hurt. I mean, you're talking about this team doesn't have answers, and no one's stepping up and making plays. When your best players, Zeke Elliott and those guys, are part of the problem, something's going on in that locker room. Somebody's got to grab a hold of this thing and rally around it. That starts with the head man. Coach McCarthy's got to get this thing. It just hadn't happened. It is a leadership issue.
Greg, super quick reaction. Go.
Yeah, where there is no leadership, there is no ownership, and nobody has owned the problems of the Cowboys so far. So I think there is a leadership issue, and I agree with the guys. I think Jerry's blinded to it.
Graziano, any reason to think that between now and the trade deadline we'll see anything interesting there?
I think maybe a couple moves here and there, but nothing major, nothing high impact like Amari Cooper from a couple years ago. They're stuck. The quarterback situation is what it is. Not going to get any better. They just have to hope that they can come together around Dalton or DiNucci or whoever.
Okay, we'll leave it there because we're out of time. Obviously, this conversation will continue on First Take. I can't wait to hear their reaction to it, and you will coming up right now on ESPN.